A young Palestinian man succumbs to his wounds hours after being shot by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Russia has dismissed as meaningless a move by the International Criminal Court to issue an arrest warrant against President Vladimir Putin. And France is a scene of new protests and clashes over the government's use of special powers to adopt a pension reform bill without a vote in Parliament. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to World News. In our top story, Israeli violence has claimed the life of another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The regime's forces opened fire on a Palestinian man near the city of Ramallah. Man has been identified as 23-year-old Yazan Omar Jamil Khasib. He succumbed to his injuries in a hospital. The Israeli military claims that Khasib tried to stab the regime's troops. Israeli forces and settlers have ramped up violence against Palestinians in recent months. Latest death brings to nearly 90 number of Palestinians killed throughout the West Bank this year. 17 of those have been children. Palestinians throughout the West Bank and Al-Quds have staged a 24-hour general strike to slam the recent killings in Jenin. Joining us now from Ramallah is Mona Candiel for an update on the story. Hello, Mona. Hope you're doing well out there. What could you tell us about this another young Palestinian life shot down there by Israeli forces?
This time, the Israeli military also claimed that a Palestinian man tried to stab soldiers at one of the military checkpoints, and then the soldiers opened fire and killed him. The Israelis then issued a statement saying that a 23-year-old Yazan Al-Khasib arrived at a military checkpoint in suspicious manners. They claimed so. This military checkpoint near the city of Ramallah and Betin, near the illegal settlement of Beit Il, they claimed that they shouted at him, but he didn't stop, so they opened fire, shot him, and killed him. Then they said he had a knife and he was planning to stab Israeli soldiers. They took his body and then they handed the body over to Palestinian paramedics and Palestinian ambulances. This means, as a killed Palestinian, if they were sure 100% that this Palestinian was trying to carry out an anti-Israeli operation to stab soldiers or even attempt to stab soldiers or carry out an operation, then it's not easy or it's not hand his body over quickly to the Palestinian paramedics, but they immediately after his death handed his body over to Palestinian paramedics. As you have mentioned, the number of Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli soldiers since the beginning of this year is today 89 Palestinians, including some 17 Palestinian minors and children were shot dead by the Israeli forces. Israeli soldiers are always quick to pull the trigger every time. And in many cases, Palestinians were killed in cold blood on mere suspicions. And at the end of the day, it was clear that they were killed in cold blood without doing anything. But as usual, the Israeli soldiers know very well that they would not dragged to be prosecuted or to the Israeli courts, and they are supported by the Israeli military establishment. So it's easy for them to shoot and kill Palestinians, claiming that those Palestinians had been attempting or planning to attack Israeli soldiers.
And Mona, we know that as far as the Palestinians go, there's always been resistance. There's always been these special operations against the occupational forces. We know that Israelis, their cabinet has always been, they're calling this the most far-right extremist, but it's always been extremist if you're a Palestinian living in occupied territories. But yet, when you still think about it, 100, nearly 100 Palestinians dead, since the turn of the year. That's, we're not even done with March, Mona. Are these not staggering numbers? And why are the Israeli forces in Nablus and in the occupied West, especially in Jenin, almost every single day raiding?
In recent months, Palestinian resistance has been increasing. More Palestinians were engaged in different forms of resistance. Palestinian youths had been, members of the newly formed groups, the Lion's Den in Nablus and Jenin brigades in Jenin. Those Palestinians were using homemade weapons and simple weapons to clash with Israeli forces at military checkpoints near illegal settlements. And this, of course, had angered the Israeli military establishment. And that's why every day Israeli forces raid Palestinian areas, claiming that they want to arrest Palestinians. But at the end of the day, the operations to Palestinian, to West Bank areas, mainly to Nablus and Jenin, have always ended up with killing Palestinians, wounding a number of people as well, because at the end of the day, they were trying to force Palestinians to quit resistance, to intimidate them. But this has not succeeded, because every day more Palestinians were engaged in different forms of resistance. Palestinians were doing their utmost in order to defend themselves, to defend their families, to defend and to protect their territories, their lands. In numerous cases, Israeli forces were backing and supporting the Israeli settlers as well to attack Palestinians, and also seizing their lands in order to build new settler units. Every day, the Israeli soldiers, in addition to the Israeli settlers, try to convince the Palestinians and remind them that they are living under occupation and that they are not allowed to resist the Israeli forces. They have to accept that they are under occupation and that the Israeli military brutality will continue, and they should not resist.
Okay, Mona, please stay safe, and thank you for that update. From Ramallah, Mona Kandil joining us. Now, the Syrian president says the West is using democracy and human rights as a tool to install puppet regimes in other countries. Bashar al-Assad says the West only classifies subservient countries as democratic. He added the West seeks to turn others into subordinate states that satisfy its demands, even at the expense of their own national interests. Assad also addressed the Russia-Ukraine war. He said the West has been trying to weaken Russia for many years, and this has nothing to do with the issue of Ukraine or Crimea. U.S. and its NATO allies have thrown full support behind Ukraine in this war. That includes providing it with military, intelligence, and financial aid while imposing crippling sanctions on Russia. Tehran says that the European Parliament has turned into a hotbed of Iranophobia and hate-mongering against the country. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman was reacting to a resolution by the legislature on the suspected poisoning of schoolgirls in Iran. European lawmakers accused Tehran of trying to suppress reports of the incident and criticized the country's failure to act. Nasser Kanani slammed the rehashing of baseless accusations against Iran, while the country is vigorously investigating the issue and has already identified some of the culprits. He added that some anti-Iran figures are exploiting the issue to push their agenda, and the European Parliament is giving voice to them. Iran has vowed to bring down the full force of law on those responsible. The European Parliament also recently adopted a resolution calling on the EU to blacklist Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps as a terrorist organization. Iran, Russia, and China are holding a joint maritime exercise in the northern part of the Sea of Oman. On the first day of the main phase of the drill, naval forces of participating countries were involved in maneuvers and tactical practices. Matthew Abbasian has your details.
The main phase of Iran, China, and Russia joint maritime exercise, dubbed Combined Maritime Security Belt Exercise 2023, has kicked off in Iran's territorial waters in the north of the Sea of Oman. In the first part of the exercise, different units of Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy, the Islamic Revolution's Guards Corps Navy, and participating vessels of Russia and China conducted different types of maritime exercises.
Today, we have successfully conducted joint tactical and operational exercises. In this drill, in addition to joint operations and tactical training and other planned activities, we have had shooting exercises in day and night, photo acts, and communication training. We had perfect synergy in conducting the joint drill with Russia and China.
First, the night shooting operation at aerial targets, which is one of the most important naval exercises, was successfully carried out by the participating units. After that, the naval units practiced Morse communication. In the morning, vessels of Iran, China, and Russia, led by an Iranian destroyer, fired at predetermined surface targets in the sea. At the end of the day, the Navy units of the three nations conducted the photo X exercise, including the formation and arrangement of the offensive. Iran says this trilateral exercise would improve the maritime cooperation of the participating countries.
Conducting this maritime exercise with other world powers shows that the Islamic Republic of Iran has the ability to synergize aligned powers and uses this ability to ensure maritime security.
The helicopters of the Navy of the Islamic Republic Army and the IRGC supervised and aerially monitored the region in all stages of the exercise. This maritime exercise is aimed at deepening cooperation among the navies of the participating countries and ensuring sustainable security in the region. Mahdi Abbasian, Konarak.
The International Criminal Court issues an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over alleged war crimes in Ukraine.
The International Criminal Court has issued two warrants of arrest in the Ukraine situation. For Vladimir Putin, President of the Russian Federation, and for Maria Lvova-Belova, Commissioner of the Russian President for Children's Rights, for the alleged war crimes of deportation of children from Ukrainian-occupied territories into the Russian Federation.
Now, the ICC judge says execution of the arrest warrant depends on international cooperation. The Hague-based court has no powers to arrest suspects. It can only exercise jurisdiction within countries that are signed up to its agreement. Russia is not a signatory, and the Kremlin has dismissed the ICC claims as outrageous and null and void. The Russian Foreign Ministry also says that the warrant lacks any meaning or legal value. Russia had itself previously accused Ukraine of committing war crimes, says Kiev has used Western-made weapons against hospitals and civilian infrastructure in the annexed regions of Ukraine. And the ICC announcement has drawn widespread reactions. Western leaders have, unsurprisingly, been welcoming the news. This is EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell.
This is an important decision of international justice and for the people of Ukraine. We have always made clear at the European Union that those responsible for the illegal aggression against Ukraine must be brought to justice. And this International Criminal Court issue is just the start in the process of accountability and holding Russia and its leader to account for the crimes and atrocities they are committing in Ukraine. Mr. President, the European Union appreciates and supports the work of the International Criminal Court and its investigation. There cannot be impunity.
Russia has vowed to destroy all warplanes supplied to Ukraine by its Western allies, including Poland and Slovakia's MiG-29s. Kremlin spokesman said these countries are getting rid of their old and unnecessary equipment. Slovakia ordered F-16 fighter jets from the U.S. that is, back in 2018, to replace its aging MiG-29 fleet. Its fleet of 11 MiG-29s were retired last summer. Poland and Slovakia are the only countries so far that have accepted Ukraine's request for fighter jets. However, the U.S. has reaffirmed its opposition to sending its F-16 fighters. Anger is growing in France after President Emmanuel Macron overrode Parliament and imposed a controversial pension overhaul. In the capital of Paris, demonstrators blocked one of key highways around the city. Police used tear gas, batons, and water cannons to disperse them. The Interior Minister says over 300 people have so far been arrested, and it comes after the French government forced through its vastly unpopular pension reform bill without a vote in Parliament. The bill will raise the retirement age from 62 to 64 and also make it more difficult to claim a full pension. Meanwhile, a leader of one of the political opposition groups in France's National Assembly has decided to file a motion of no confidence against the government.
This is about helping our country by voting against this unfair and ineffective pension reform. It is about preserving our trampled parliamentary democracy and social democracy. It is about respecting and listening to our fellow compatriots, 80% of whom want this motion passed. Finally, the vote on this motion will help us emerge from a deep political crisis.
The no-confidence motion has so far garnered 91 signatories from 5 opposition groups, which is nearly 200 votes short. MPs who have put down their names have called on their colleagues to be responsible and back the statement. France has been plagued by paralyzing protests and sprawling strikes since the president announced his pension reform plans back in January. Emmanuel Macron says he can only keep the system from collapsing by imposing the changes, but opponents believe the overhaul is extremely unfair. Another wave of flight cancellation hits German airports as a result of strikes over pay. Hundreds of flights were canceled as German union Verdi called on airport staff in Dusseldorf, Cologne, Stuttgart, and Baden-Baden to walk out. Earlier in the week, airports in Berlin, Bremen, and Hamburg also canceled all their commercial flights as a result of the strikes. Airport staff are protesting inadequate pay rises do not keep pace with inflation. Strikes have resulted in staffing problems in post-pandemic travel. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News, and goodbye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
In recent days, depositors of Silicon Valley Bank have closed their deposits, sold the company's shares, and precipitated a financial crisis in the United States. Federal authorities, meanwhile, have shut down another loss-making Signature Bank active in the field of cryptocurrency. We take a look at the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of France 24, France 24, has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden sought to reassure Americans over the country's financial system on Monday, 13th of March, as more U.S. banks and leading European lenders were hammered amid contagion worries. Silicon Valley Bank, a key lender to startups across the United States since the 1980s, collapsed after a sudden run on deposits, prompting regulators to seize control of the institution on Friday, 10th of March. On Sunday night, 12th of March, the U.S. federal authorities stepped in to protect all depositors at Silicon Valley Bank, and regulators took over a second troubled lender. President Joe Biden claimed in a brief White House address, "Americans can have confidence that the banking system is safe. Your deposits will be there when you need them." But there were immediate signs of pressure at additional U.S. lenders. The San Francisco-based First Republic Bank shares collapsed around 62%, while Ohio-headquartered KeyCorp lost 27% and Zions Bank Corporation lost 26%. There was also plenty of red on the screens in Europe, where bourses in Paris, Frankfurt and Milan fell around 3% or more. Germany's Commerzbank closed down nearly 13%. Spain's Santander shed more than 7% of its value. And the Netherlands' ING Bank fell nearly 6%. Credit Suisse, already mired in a scandal, closed down nearly 10% down on its share value. City Index analyst Fiona Cinquotta told Agence France-Presse, "Far from calming nerves, fear of contagion has ramped up further, with investors dumping risky assets across Europe. Banks are leading the charge southwards, with investors taking aim at Spanish and Italian banks, suggesting that these are considered the weakest links in Europe." Most financial market watchers are optimistic that the upheaval will not be comparable to the 2008 financial crisis. Still, many forecasters see a rising risk of recession, especially in light of expectations that the central banks will continue to lift interest rates. The next major move is expected in the coming days, when the European Central Bank, the ECB, meets for a likely half a percentage point interest rate rise. President Joe Biden praised the immediate action taken by officials. In a joint statement on Sunday, 12th of March, the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the Treasury Department said Silicon Valley Bank depositors would have access to all of their money starting on Monday, 13th of March. The Fed announced it would make extra funding available to banks to help them meet the needs of depositors, which would include withdrawals. President Biden claimed while the government is ensuring that Silicon Valley Bank depositors get their money back, no losses will be borne by the taxpayers. Biden said the management of the failed banks would lose their jobs and that shareholders would not have their losses covered. But the spectacular speed of Silicon Valley Bank's collapse also added scrutiny on regulators, with analysts noting that the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell failed to flag a Silicon Valley Bank-type problem last week in 2 days of congressional testimony, suggesting the central bank was caught off guard. The Federal Reserve late on Monday afternoon announced a review of the supervision and regulation of Silicon Valley Bank, an acknowledgement that the crisis had caught the central bank off guard. Wall Street Journal has also covered this story and tells us more. U.S. regulators have closed down New York-based Signature Bank, a big lender in the country's crypto industry, in a desperate attempt to backstop the banking crisis and quell concerns among customers about the safety of their deposits. The closure of the bank marks another major failure in the U.S. banking history, 2 days after authorities shuttered Silicon Valley Bank in a collapse that experts say has shaken the foundations of U.S. economy. In a joint statement released on Sunday, 12th of March, the U.S. Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation cited the closure of the New York State Chartered Commercial Bank with total assets of approximately $110.3 billion and total deposits of approximately $88.59 billion as of 31st of December 2022. American regulators said keeping open the 24-year-old institution, which held deposits from law firms and real estate companies, could threaten the U.S. financial system's stability. The U.S. Treasury Department and other bank regulators claimed in the joint statement all of the depositors of Signature Bank and Silicon Valley Bank will be made whole, and no losses will be borne by the taxpayer. According to a reporter on the scene, employees of the bank appeared to gather at the company's Manhattan headquarters on Sunday, 12th of March. However, representatives refused to comment on the news of the bank's closure. President Joe Biden tweeted in reaction to Signature Bank's collapse. Joe Biden tweeted, "I'm fairly committed to holding those responsible for this mess fully accountable and to continue our efforts to strengthen oversight and regulation of larger banks so that we are not in this position again." Joe Biden added, "The American people and American businesses can have confidence that their bank deposits will be there when they need them." Earlier, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the government wanted to avoid financial contagion from the implosion of the Silicon Valley Bank. In an interview with CBS on Sunday, Janet Yellen said the U.S. government wanted to make sure that the troubles that exist at one bank don't create contagion to others that are sound. She assured that they are working with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, which is the government's deposit guarantee agency, on a resolution to the problem. Janet Yellen claimed, "I'm sure that the FDIC are considering a wide range of available options that include acquisitions." Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner said in an interview on ABC News on Sunday that the best outcome would be to find a buyer for Silicon Valley Bank before markets open up in Asia. Media reported that the New York financial institution Signature Bank was forced into closure abruptly on Sunday after losing its risky bet on cryptocurrency, coupled with a run on deposits by investors panicking from Silicon Valley Bank's seizure. The media reported investors had been frightened by the speed at which startup-focused Silicon Valley Bank, the 16th largest lender in the United States, was toppled by customer withdrawals. Silicon Valley Bank's news last week prompted investors to withdraw more than $100 billion in market value from U.S. banks, prompting swift action from government officials over the weekend to try and restore confidence in the U.S. financial system. Financial analysts linked Signature Bank's closure to the panic surrounding Silicon Valley Bank, which regulators had seized on Friday, 10th of March. Meanwhile, the New York Department of Financial Services took possession of the bank pursuant to Section 606 of New York banking law in order to protect depositors.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ.
Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers, as always, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Abdullah, and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Again, always a pleasure being with you.
Thank you very much. As before, we are going to criticize or continue the critique of the movie The Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, produced in 1956. This is one of the top 100 best movies of Hollywood. Well, and based on, of course, the biblical traditions and the Bible. This is basically showing or portraying the story of Moses or the life of Moses. Let's take a listen to a short part of this movie and then we'll be back. Don't go away.
And this you call treason. Who would take a throne by force that he has earned by deeds? But this in Ethiopia, your name shall be carved beside mine on every pylon. Yours, Ramses, will be nowhere. But in my judgment book, you have accused your brother falsely.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are criticizing the movie The Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, produced in 1956. Sayyid Abdullah, let me start with you in this episode. In this part of the movie, there is a reference to the rivalry. Of course, you can see it all along, all across this movie, this long movie rather, right? There is a rivalry between Moses and the Pharaoh's biological son, Seti, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any verification for this in the Quran? I don't seem to have heard of it.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The story of the sister and the brother of Musa, which are the biological sons of Fir'aun, does not exist in the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as him having a brother.
Yes.
Musa, alayhi salam, he was having issues with the Fir'aun, the Ramesses,
mm-hmm.
himself, directly. So from childhood, I think even the ayah doesn't come to my mind, but when Asiya, she found him, she said, let's take him a son because we don't have a son. So that's the best opportunity for us to have a son. So لِنَتَّخِذُهُ وَلَدًا, I think the ayah says, so we can make a son out of him. If they had a son, they would have killed Musa, I guess. But that's the Bible or the Old Testament story of Musa, that they gave him a brother and they gave him a sister. And then they created this rivalry between him and this imaginary brother.
Mm.
So the Quran always corrects the mistakes of the Bible. Because a lot of people say the Quran is a ripoff of the Bible or the Old Testament. It's not, but it's a correction. So instead of having a brother and a rival, there is no brother rival. There were no two Pharaohs, there's just one.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this comment and correction. Let's take a listen to another part of the movie, The Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, produced in 1956. And then we'll be back. Stay with us.
If the God of Abraham has a purpose for my son, he will come to know it and fulfill it.
Come, gather your things quickly, quickly. I shall see you want for nothing. You and your children shall be given freedom.
Has my mother forgotten? Only the Pharaoh can free a slave.
Moses, do not enter. There is only sorrow here.
Are you comforting it, my mother? I followed you here to find this woman, Yoshebet.
Back to the program Viewpoint on RIB English Radio. This is the movie critique program here on this radio station. We'll be dealing with the critique of the Ten Commandments, produced in 1956, directed by Cecil B. DeMille. Well, Brother Yasser, you know, there is this part of the movie that Moses realized that the woman who took care of him was not his biological mother. Basically, according to the Quran, it's Asiya, but according to the Bible or this movie, it's Bifia, right? When he was about 30 years old, he came to realize this, that was not, I mean, that the woman in the palace was not his biological mother, right? Is that true? What does the Quran say about this? You know, his mother, by the way, criticized him for worshiping the idols and having his slaves work hard for the masters. I'm talking about his biological mother. When he comes across his biological mother, so his biological mother, according to the movie, she criticizes Moses for this, you know, for basically being at the service of the palace or Pharaoh to do all this, like to have the slaves, for example, work hard for him. Can prophets of God do so even unwillingly like this, as portrayed in this movie?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Just before I answer the question, if you allow me just to make a comment.
Sure.
The movie was made in 1956, right?
Mm-hmm.
8 years prior, or 7 years prior, a certain country, a certain land was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
The occupied lands of Palestine was done in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie, as you mentioned, was one of the best movies ever made. Why 9 years after this? What are they trying to show people? Are they trying to take people away? No, the Jews should be there. Mm-hmm. The Jews must be there. Anyway, there's something to ponder upon. Why a movie so close to taking away land that doesn't belong to you and continuously claiming till today mm-hmm. that this land is our birthright.
Right.
The movie being made. There's something to ponder upon for our listeners to ponder upon. Something mm-hmm. that came to my mind. That's so close to that particular moment when the wars were happening between the occupiers and the Arab nations around. It's something to ponder upon. Anyway, this is something that came to my mind. Regarding your question, according to what we believe as Muslims, especially as followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we believe in the infallibility or the ismah of all prophets. Now, obviously, a question does come about with regards to certain prophets doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like worshipping idols, that is not something that is easy to accept. Yes, for example, we have a theological term known as tarkul awla, which is not a sin. It is not something in disobedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because obviously the infallibility of the prophets have different levels and they apply in different manner. It's a theological discussion that obviously requires a good amount of time to discuss. But here, in this sense, where a prophet intentionally, knowingly worships something other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, intention is important, intentionally, knowingly, this is a place of ishkal. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to accept because yes. If the question will come, if a prophet then at that time does not know God at that time, being what, 20s, 30s?
30s, yeah.
Yeah, then why all of a sudden now? Did he not know? Did he not have the intellect of that? There were people in that particular vicinity. Those slaves were those who believed in a God, one God.
Yes.
He was not able to decipher this? I mean, so therefore, those people technically are better than him. Because
mm-hmm.
they believed they were in that such dire conditions. They were able to decipher, no, there is one God and there is a Savior coming. Did he not know that he was a Savior? And obviously the Quran, how Moses left the palace is a very different story, obviously.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Again, we see the plan of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when he unintentionally hit somebody
mm-hmm.
and he fled. Again, unintentionally, this is one of the things people ask.
Yes.
Why he killed somebody? He didn't mean to kill him. It wasn't intentional. He was defending somebody.
Yes.
And then he fled. And then the story of Madain and so on and so forth. And then taking the circle and coming back. So in the Quran, in your other question, he never met his mother again. Besides, the Quran doesn't mention it.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know from certain reports is that he had a biological sister.
Right.
We see this, that he had a biological that used to look after him while he was in the palace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he had a sister. She accompanied the mother of Musa alayhi salam to the Nile. and then she would look after him. So, for example, the story of when Musa alayhi salam was not feeding, she was the one who said, I know this person who will be able to feed him.
Mm-hmm.
So she was there, she was the one looking after
him.
So yes, there was a sister, but it was his biological sister.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the table had been changed or something. So the Quran tells us, as the Sayyid mentioned, there was a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the daughter of your own.
Right.
It was his own very biological sister.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's take a short break again by listening to another part of the movie, The Ten Commandments, produced in 1956, directed by Cecil B. DeMille. Stay with us.
First friend of the Pharaoh, keeper of the royal seal, prince of On, prince of Memphis, prince of Thebes, beloved of the Nile god, conqueror of Ethiopia, general of generals, commander of the Egyptian host, a man of mud. Is that what you want? To be a slave?
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. We are still criticizing the movie The Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, produced in 1956 with Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah. Sayyid Abdullah, again, I'm going to ask you about this part, the girl who loved Moses in the movie, when he was a prince, of course, in the palace, talks to Moses and asks him, why you change yourself into a slave? This is a very important question, I guess. We have to stop there and ponder upon it. What changes a man? This is my question. What changes a man? And what causes a revolution in humans? We don't see that often. For example, we have one whore, for example, in the Karbala desert, right?
Mm.
Or we have like Abu Zar, for example, in our Islamic tradition.
Yeah.
So what changes a man?
Okay. Before I answer the question, the whole story about Musa alayhi salam having this love interest is also one of these things that they used to do to kind of make the prophets look really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could you imagine a prophet of God having a lustful relationship with a woman before he becomes a prophet?
Mm-hmm.
That's just degrading to the prophets of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is something that the Old Testament and the New Testament, they do heavily. They make the prophets look as bad as they could. So the whole story of Musa alayhi salam having a love of interest doesn't exist. That was just made up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the listeners have to be aware of that. He never had an interest.
So
even when he went to Midian and he met the girls of Shu'aib, he said, I'm going to walk in front of you. You throw the rocks, tell me which direction I should go.
Mm-hmm.
That he had that kind of piety. Yet alone he's having an affair with a princess, which is, astaghfirullah, is like one of the crimes that they committed towards Musa alayhi salam.
So they want to stain, basically, the divinity.
Exactly.
That the followers of these religions, in fact, consider for a prophet, a divine prophet.
Exactly. So they just want to make him as simple as they can.
Or bring it down from the divine.
There's nothing simple about him. And it's always in the movies as well.
Like, right.
I mean, throughout the whole movie, they make Musa as a simple person. He has fights with God. He gets angry with God. He loses faith in God at some point. So that's just, they want to bring the status of Musa down. The question is, what makes a man free or a slave? We are only slave to our desires and our passions. We become the slaves because I would put myself in chains when I need something from you, for example. I bring myself to you and start to beg you to give me something that I want. That's when I'm a slave.
Mm-hmm.
You become free when you unshackle yourself from the desires of yourself.
Right.
That's like once you break off these desires and you're no longer bound by them, then you become free. So this lady, she understood it opposite way. She thought as long as he has material wealth,
mm-hmm.
then he's a free.
Yeah.
But if he's out of them, then he's a slave.
I see.
Actually, it's the opposite. When I don't need anybody, I don't need Pharaoh, I don't need his wealth, I don't need anything, then I'm free. And no one can control me and no one has power over me. That's what made Musa stronger. Because when he was in Pharaoh's house, he was much weaker in the sense of him trying to free his people. Now, Pharaoh has nothing against them.
Right.
There's nothing I have that you can take from me that can bring me down or break me. I am at my point of strength. So we only become slaves when we attach ourselves to this world and we put the chains of this world of desires around our necks. If we free ourselves, then we're free. So, for example, Hur, the example that he gave. Hur, he said to himself, he said, I am making myself choose between the Akhirah, the heaven, or this world. And I will never choose Akhirah over this world. So he freed himself from this world. Thus, he was free, as his mother called him, Hur.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. And thank you very much, Brother Yasser, for your nice comments and contribution to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critic program on IRIB English Radio. And thank you very much for listening to this program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
The baby's name is Moses. He will grow up to take down the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai. Paramount Pictures is proud to announce the return of the greatest motion picture of all time, The Ten Commandments. What love it unveils. What drama it unfolds. What a story it tells. What majesty it encompasses. One of the greatest adventure stories ever hurled from any book. Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments in Technicolor. The original film has millions thrilled to it, all roaring to the single most spectacular scene ever filmed, the parting of the Red Sea. Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Ron DeSantis says United States should not get further entangled in the Ukraine war. The Florida governor's remarks align with Donald Trump's view and are likely to shift sentiment in the Republican Party away from supporting Ukraine. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is widely expected to seek the GOP presidential nomination in 2024, said on Monday that continued support from the United States for Ukraine as it defends itself in the war against Russia is not a vital national interest for the United States. While DeSantis has previously criticized what he called a blank check policy for U.S. aid to Ukraine, this is his most direct and expansive answer on the issue yet. The Florida governor's stance puts him in line with former President Donald Trump and at odds with other top Republicans and potential 2024 candidates who have shown ardent support for Ukraine. While the United States has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness within our military, achieving energy security and independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them, Ron DeSantis said in a statement to Fox News Channel host Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson sent 6 questions to potential GOP presidential candidates about the war in Ukraine. Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, former Vice President Mike Pence, biotechnology entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, South Dakota Governor Chrissy Noem, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie answered the questionnaire. Several, including former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, did not respond to the questionnaire, and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley released her answers publicly on Tuesday, 14th of March. Donald Trump told Tucker Carlson that opposing Russia in Ukraine is in Europe's strategic interest, but not for the United States. He also repeated his claim that Russian President Vladimir Putin would not have started a war with Ukraine if he was president. When asked if there's a limit to funding and material that he'd send to Ukraine, Donald Trump said, "It would strongly depend on my meeting with President Putin and Russia." Donald Trump also called for European countries to boost their support and said he would tell Ukraine that there will be little more money coming from us unless Russia continues to prosecute the war. In an interview with Fox News Channel host Sean Hannity on his radio show last week, Donald Trump said he would have negotiated a deal for Russia to take over certain areas of Ukraine. Ron DeSantis, widely seen as Donald Trump's chief rival in the race for the Republican Party's presidential nomination, and their positions on the U.S. policy towards Ukraine reflect a shift among some Republicans who oppose additional assistance to Ukraine. Nikki Haley took note of the similarity between Ron DeSantis and the former President Donald Trump on the question of Ukraine, and suggested Trump is right when he says Governor DeSantis is just copying him. "I have a different style than President Trump, and while I agree with him on most policies, I do not on this one. Republicans deserve a choice, not an echo," she said in her answer. Other prospective GOP presidential candidates have called on President Biden to do more to help Ukraine in the war with Russia, exposing a rift within the Republican Party ahead of the next election. Former Vice President Mike Pence said last month that the United States and its allies need to accelerate the pace of military provisions for Ukraine until it defeats Russia. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, the two top Republicans in polling regarding the 2024 presidential nomination, have said defending Ukraine was not a vital US interest, in remarks that will demoralize Kiev and encourage President Putin to believe that time is on his side. Donald Trump, a long-standing Putin admirer, has been consistently skeptical about US support for Ukraine and has suggested he could broker a peace deal involving Ukraine surrendering territory to Russia. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had previously tried to dodge questions on Ukraine, and his new comments are likely to shift sentiment in the Republican Party further from support of Ukraine. Both men answered a questionnaire from Tucker Carlson, the primetime Fox News Channel host, who posted the responses on Twitter. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, said the United States should not become further entangled in the Russia-Ukraine war. Donald Trump, the former president, who dominates polling, said the Ukraine war was not a vital U.S. interest, but it is for Europe. That is why Europe should be paying far more than we are, or at least equal to us. The remarks come at a time of military stalemate, while neither side proving able to make significant breakthroughs on the battlefield. Ukraine is hoping to break the impasse this spring, but it is unclear whether it has enough weapons and experienced soldiers to achieve this aim. Analysts have said that the longer the war continues, the better President Putin's chances, as Kiev's Western backers get weary of the cost of the war, and Russia's greater population becomes an increasingly important factor. To the questionnaire of Tucker Carlson, Ron DeSantis said, "While the US has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness within our military, achieving energy security and energy independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party, becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not a vital U.S. interest." Ron DeSantis also accused Joe Biden of providing a virtual blank check to Ukraine and said, "Without question, peace should be the objective. The United States should not provide assistance that could require the deployment of American troops or enable Ukraine to engage in offensive operations beyond its borders." President Joe Biden has said U.S. troops will not be deployed and has not encouraged Kiev to go beyond attempting to expel the Russians from its territory. F-16s and long-range missiles should be off the table, Ron DeSantis said. These moves would risk explicitly drawing the United States closer to a hot war between the world's two largest nuclear powers. That risk is unacceptable. The Florida governor also said a policy of regime change in Russia, no doubt popular among the DC foreign policy interventionists, would greatly increase the stakes of the conflict, making the use of nuclear weapons more likely. Apart from an off-the-cuff Biden remark a year ago saying that Putin cannot remain in power, the Biden administration has been adamant it is not pursuing regime change in Russia. In his response to Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump claimed, "Russia would definitely not have raided and attacked Ukraine if I was U.S. president."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.